Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Anika Zubair, and welcome back to the next episode of the Customer Success Channel podcast, brought to you by PlanHat, the modern customer platform. This podcast is created for anyone working in or interested in the customer success field. On this podcast, we will speak to leaders in the industry about their experiences and their definitions of customer success and get their advice and best practices on how to run a CS organization. Today, we are speaking to Emily Garza, AVP of Customer Success at Fastly. Prior to her time at Fastly, she worked at quite a few major corporations like AT&T and Nike, but her roles were primarily in sales, and then she transitioned into customer success. Her roles have always been customer-facing and always about driving more revenue. Today, we will speak to Emily all about a CSM's responsibility for revenue. Should a CSM hold a revenue target? Should we compensate CSMs like we do sales? Let's chat to Emily to find out what she thinks. So welcome, Emily, to the podcast. I'm really, really excited to have you with us today. But before we get into today's topic, could you please tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in customer success?
Sure. And thanks so much for having me today. So I've been in customer-facing roles really my entire career, so over 10 years, and a variety of roles. So I actually started in the sales world, and I really view that as a positive because I think it gives me some empathy and perspective for that role. It's a really critical role in partnering with customer success. I've also done account management and business development in kind of their own varieties before moving over into more of a fully focused customer success type role.
Awesome. And it's cool to hear how your career started in the revenue side of the business and also continues to be in the revenue side of the business, because I think it's a hot topic and obviously very relevant to the topic we're going to speak about today. But your CS experience, like you said, is very varied, and it started from AT&T to now at Fastly, which is a SaaS B2B business. And curious, what did you do in order to get from where you were to where you are today? And how was the transition from being in a telecom communication company into a cloud-based company?
Definitely a big transition, both in terms of kind of areas of focus as well as just company size and structure. So, you know, AT&T, huge global brand. It was an amazing experience as a first role because there was so much structure and training and really gave me a good foundation and framework. But, you know, the con of that is when you're in a company that size, it's really hard to impact change and you have a lot less impact for the voice of the customer. You know, you're supporting 5, 10, 20 of millions of customers versus, you know, a much smaller SaaS company. So when I ended up moving out to the Bay Area with AT&T, I worked there for a couple of years and then started to get the bug, as anyone who's moved to the Bay Area can probably understand. There's the allure of startup culture, and I really just started networking. It was not necessarily with the intention to immediately get a job, but just to learn. Because one of the things that I had heard in the past was all these cool, interesting startups didn't want big company people, right? Like it was viewed as you were too stodgy or too structured and you wouldn't be able to fit into this agile world that startups needed you to be in. So I really started networking to understand, how do I position my experience as a positive thing rather than something that's going to hold me back? And actually through those conversations, got introduced to Fastly and led to the opportunity to interview there.
Awesome. Yeah, I would also agree the power of networks is so important and it leads to a lot more than I think a lot of people even give it credit to, because sometimes you can just be having a conversation, but then it could lead to, actually, I know someone who's hiring in the startup SaaS CS world, which is a very small world, no matter how much of a hot topic it is or hot place to be in customer success right now. I have to say that the leaders I do know, sometimes it's just very interesting when you see leaders move into certain positions because, oh, totally knew that person and cool that they got that role, which I'm sure was very similar to when you were introduced to Fastly and now you knew more of the CS SaaS space as well. But obviously, we're speaking about customer success today. And I want to also highlight maybe what's been one of your major reasons for success in your field, moving from sales to CS, and also what's your biggest learning so far?
In terms of success, I would say it's the factor of curiosity. So when I was starting the CS org at Fastly, I reached out to so many different people on LinkedIn just to really get an understanding of different frameworks and how did other people think about it and what were the things that I should be thinking about that I wasn't, you know, really just to tap into that collective knowledge. And then similarly, we recently launched more of our Tech Touch or Digital First initiative. And same thing, going back out to the network and really understanding, you know, what are people doing and how can I learn from that? I don't think that we have to reinvent the wheel every time. And I think, you know, one of the best things about the CS community is the willingness to share and network with each other. So I've been really fortunate to be able to do that. But I think a lot of it is being thoughtful and being curious about, you know, who are you going to approach when you're asking for their time? How do you make it worthwhile? That sort of thing. From a learning perspective, I would say it's really easy for like a team or even a company to say that they're customer focused, but saying that you're customer focused and CS feeling like they're heard and valued aren't necessarily always the same thing. So it took me a little bit of time to really understand that because it was like, oh, well, you say you care about the customers, but you're not doing the thing that I want to do, right? And they're not always directly aligned, but CS needs to be kind of that guiding factor and help translate to allow other teams to connect those dots and see the impact, right? I had a kind of eye-opening example in working with the product team where one of my, I'll say, first big projects was, you know, hey, all these customers are asking for this feature. Like, why haven't we built it yet? And it was just the wrong approach, right? It was very combative. It was very much like, you know, us against you. And why haven't you prioritized my single ask? But they're balancing a lot of other things as well. So, you know, next time I kind of went through a similar exercise where it was like, oh, this is something that a lot of customers are bringing up. There's a lot of focus around this. It was, okay, how can I summarize the data and the impact? How can I partner to understand and scope like level of effort and how to start to implement? So I'm giving the product team a little bit more context, a little bit more of the story. So it's not just, you know, what have you done for me lately? But it's how do we partner on this to have kind of joint success?
I absolutely love two things that you just spoke about there. One, the curiosity part, because I think being a great CSM means that you have to be curious about your customer, your product, your customer's industry, the industry you're in. You just have to be curious and continuous learning, which I also think aligns a lot with a sales tactic. You have to be curious to want to be able to sell into a certain industry or field. And then you also just mentioned about how it's so important to make sure that you are aligned with your product team and really storytelling with your product team, which is something that I think CSMs don't realize is very much a sales tactic as well. Like storytelling is a way of selling, but it is also a way for advocating for your customers. And it is a way for you to, yeah, just make sure you're that internal advocate to the product team and make sure the story is really, really clear. And as a CSM, being able to tell that story clear, concise, in a nice way to make it give more context to what the customer is asking for really helps product get onto your side and also your customer side, which is a great segue because we're talking about two things that are both sales and CS attributes or personality types, which is the world you come from. And I know today we want to talk a little bit more about customer success responsibility for revenue, because I think it's a very hot topic and it's also a very highly debated topic in the CS world. And my first question to you would be, should customer success handle renewals or should it be the sales team?
My preference is that it's handled by customer success. I say that with the caveat that I think that there are some instances where actually having sales handle it does make sense. So I don't think it's completely black and white, which to your point is probably why it's so highly debated, because it really depends on the situation. But I think from a customer success owning perspective, some of the reasons that I think it's so important for us to continue to own it is that you've already done the work to build that ongoing relationship, right? So you have the contact, you have the connection. And I think it's a little bit strange to then reintroduce a new person at either what could be or what could make it be a more sensitive time, right? You're kind of relinquishing your power and saying, oh, this renewal is a big deal, so I got to bring in somebody else. But I think that if you're really building to the renewal throughout the year, having the CS own it actually makes it a little bit more of a non-event, right? Like you've been doing all of the things to work towards the renewal anyway. It's more, hey, we're in agreement on, you know, the products and services that are going to be included. You've seen the value. Let's just execute the paper. That's obviously an ideal world. Then there's the negotiation fees. So I'm not totally discounting that, but you know, that's kind of the goal, right? That you're doing all the work leading up to it anyway. And I think the other piece of having customer success own it is that that's the group and that's the team that really cares about the long-term relationship. So one thing of why we've kind of changed our structure and incorporated customer success owning renewals is because we saw that there was actually a difference in write down when sales owned it versus customer success owned it. Because customer success is focused on that win-win and that long-term relationship. And, you know, you discussing and negotiating this renewal is actually setting you up for the next renewal versus a little bit more of the sales perspective, which was get it done, get it off my plate. This isn't my priority, which actually tended to lead towards bigger write downs because it was like, the customer will agree faster if we give them a bigger discount, right? I think where the caveats come in of where sales owns it, I'd say two things. So first is if the renewal is handled by a completely separate team, we work typically with more of like a DevOps type of environment. So, you know, say our main contacts and champion and everyone else is on the DevOps side, and then they just bring in procurement completely separate for the renewal. Okay, maybe that's an opportunity to bring sales back in because it's more focused on negotiation. You're less reliant maybe on some of those relationships that you've developed. I think the second piece is if your CS team function, you're kind of like why CS, why the team is formed, is maybe more focused on like an onboarding or training role rather than a renewal and upsell role, then negotiation might not be in the skill set of the team. And then you want to give it back to someone who does have that in their skill set because you obviously want to set your team up for success. And you know, if they're more on that onboarding and training focus, then negotiation probably isn't quite as relevant, maybe to their background or experience. And you'd actually be setting them up for a harder time than offloading it to another team.
Yeah. And I'm actually kind of surprised that for someone that comes from like a sales BDR background, you totally think that renewals should be handled by the customer success manager, which I also agree with. I think that the renewal should sit with the customer success manager. But a lot of people would debate that how can you then be the trusted advisor or, you know, that partner that a CSM is called and then still ask a customer for that upsell, renewal, more money, let's say, and able to balance that kind of relationship.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is kind of proving that consistent value. So being that point person throughout the year and also structuring the team and getting all of the internal alignment that it won't be completely sales focused. So one of the things that we did is, you know, sat down with our CEO and our CRO and really made sure we were all on the same page of, you know, even though we're owning renewals and upsells, you know, do you want us to act like sales? Do you want it to be kind of the end of the month push? Like, let's do whatever we can to get things in the door. Or do you want us to be focused on long-term relationships? And across the board, we got supportive focus on the long-term relationship. And because we have that buy-in and alignment, it allows us to, yes, introduce new products, but do it in a way that's really thoughtful for the customer and on the customer's timeline, right? So if the customer says, hey, this is really interesting, but I can't tackle this project till next quarter. Great. Like, we'll talk about it next quarter. We're not going to kind of like overtly push it now just to hit a sales number. I think that depending on the structure and as long as you're really focused on that overall long-term build rather than kind of those short-term wins, then it can be owned by customer success.
I would agree, but I think the CRO or the CFO in a company is probably going to still want to make sure you're hitting certain metrics and milestones on a quarterly or at least minimally on an annual basis. So I think it's sometimes really hard to find that balance of like, hey, let's not be super salesy and have like quarterly targets, but let's also think about the long game and making sure that our customers are set up for success in the long run. And that's where a CSM comes in. And that's why I also think that a CS team should own that renewal number, because they are looking at the holistic picture rather than just the quarterly goal. So totally aligned on that one. I have another question around the basic setup or metrics on how much revenue a single CSM should own. I think there's a lot of debate around this, especially with the CS responsibility for ARR. How much ARR do you think one CSM should actually handle or be responsible for? Or is there a number or of accounts, or how are you guys tracking that at Fastly?
Yeah, so this was, I'll say, one of the holy grails I was trying to chase as we were starting to set up the CS team. And I know that there's, you know, different metrics out there of, you know, a book of business should be 2 million ARR, you know, some number, but I think it really depends on the business and kind of how you've structured the CSM team. So for us, we look at specifically by the book of business supported. I'm not a fan of saying, you know, there's a flat number that everybody gets, either in terms of number of accounts or, you know, number of amount of revenue or quota or anything like that. I had a sales experience in the past where it was a young-ish SaaS company, but they had, in a sales world, issued the same quota for selling this SaaS product in like the middle of Ohio and in San Francisco. And it was just one of those things that was like, seemed so directly unfair, where it was like, of course, buyers of tech in San Francisco are just going to be more advanced and buy more than in Ohio. Like, it's not really fair to have those people on the same page. So that was kind of a something that's always stuck in my mind of it's really got to be focused on the specific book of business and things like that. So for me, I think a big part of it is really partnering with finance. So what are they modeling and expecting, and making sure that as you're building out this organization, you're really clear on what you're going to cover and, you know, what that means in terms of impact to the business, right? Because if you think that one CSM is going to support 10 accounts and finance is modeling that they're going to support 20 or 30, you're never going to get more headcount, because you're always going to be behind of what finance is kind of expecting. So making sure that you can continue to give them insight and really be on the same page about what the structure looks like in terms of headcount and coverage and things like that. So we don't have like a CSM to ARR model, but what we've done instead is we've outlined expected behaviors and actions for each of our segments and then put together more of like an allocated time model. So for an example, if you have an enterprise customer, maybe the expectation is you do 3 QBRs a year, and each QBR, say, takes 3 hours of prep. And so we build kind of all of those different pieces out of, you know, what's the activity, how long generally should it take? And that starts to dictate how many customers you can support for each of the segments. But then we also still use a range. So, you know, in our enterprise segment, we look to target between 20 and 25 customers, because not every customer is the same, right? You get some that you're just happy when they respond once a quarter. And then you get some who are like, can we talk every day? Like, I just want to keep sharing information with you. So some of it is being able to be responsive to the types of customers that are within a certain book of business.
Yeah. So what you said about being aligned with your CFO or the head of finance team and making sure that your team is directly aligned to how much revenue they're going to bring in and also how much revenue they're handling is so, so important. I think a lot of businesses sometimes only look at, like you said, the linear growth, like this much ARR means this many CSMs. But it's interesting that at Fastly, you guys have a combination of activities and revenue equals the right number of accounts for a CSM. So it's time-based as much as it is revenue-based, which is an interesting tactic because I think a lot of people usually just base it on revenue. So that's new. So thanks for sharing that. Now that we're talking a little bit about how many accounts some of your enterprise customer success managers are handling, like you said, 25 or there's a certain amount of ARR that they are handling, what are your thoughts for compensation models for customer success managers? Because they are handling a lot of ARR by the sounds of it, but what are the do's and don'ts? Are you making sure that they hit a certain net retention number? Are you incentivizing them to upsell, or are you incentivizing more of the activities that you mentioned before? And do they have direct sales targets?
So we do look at net revenue retention, and I feel really strongly that CS should have some skin in the game. So there should be some compensation aspect to the role, obviously not as much as sales. And please, please, please don't just duplicate the sales comp plan and just call it a CSM comp plan because that doesn't work either. But I do think that incenting long-term is really important. And it allows the CSM to really feel that ownership for their book of business and drive it forward. So kind of to your point, we set up revenue as an annual achievement number because that allows for some of the just ebbs and flows, right? There's seasonality or contract renewal that there was a discount on versus, you know, an upsell that you get the following month. So I think looking at it from an annual perspective allows kind of everything to right size and really show the overall direction of the book of business that the CSM drives. And I know I said, you know, don't use the sales comp plan, but I will say that you also want to make sure that you're aligning the CS comp with the sales comp to make sure that they're not conflicting, right? Because the last thing that you want to do is be incenting these two different groups that should be both focused on supporting the customer in different ways that's actually going to cause a bad customer experience or a bad internal handoff experience. So making sure that both of those are at least considering each other, even if they're not the same structure.
Totally. I think having aligned goals and comp plans and just target metrics across the board naturally makes your business more customer centric and make sure that even from the pre-sales to the sales to the CS process to the renewal support, whatever department you're in, as long as things are aligned when it comes to overall metrics and targets, it makes it much more easier, better. You can use any word there to make sure your customer experience is just much, much better. And really, again, much more designed to be aligned to customer goals rather than just a revenue number, which is also super important to consider. But speaking of revenue number and the sales team, and I keep coming back to this just because revenue, people always think it's a sales metric, but the majority of revenue is actually handled by customer success. If you think about reoccurring revenue and the millions and millions that a CS department make up, I want to know, is there a opportunity funnel or something like a customer success funnel at Fastly to identify opportunities for upsells or to be able to predict upsells? Because you mentioned that, you know, there is an upsell part of the CSM's book of business. It's a part of their comp plan, but do they also have to identify these opportunities? Do they have to create some sort of funnel like sales do? What does that look like at Fastly?
Yeah. So I think in general, like, yes, there should be some level of opportunity funnel because I think it helps tell the revenue story and the impact that the team is having. Specifically at Fastly, there are a kind of a couple different flavors depending on where we are in terms of ownership and transition. So there are some products that we will actually more so create a CS qualified lead and re-engage sales on. There are some, you know, after a certain time where the account's fully transitioned, then the CSM will actually just own that and be responsible for inputting the opportunity in Salesforce and then doing all that ongoing maintenance, right? Making sure that the dates are correct and the amount is correct and, you know, we're forecasting it accurately. I think that that's something that is a struggle across many teams is forecasting accuracy. But, you know, having the right conversations with your customer and understanding, you know, what is realistic, what is their timeline, and kind of back to our earlier point, not necessarily forcing your timeline, but really understanding, you know, when does it fit into their business and how does that even the approval and signature process work to make sure that you really have a good understanding of when that upsell or renewal is actually going to be signed. But yes, I think having some sort of funnel, whether it's something that you overtly own or you're kind of putting opportunities into, I think is so important because, again, you're doing that work and building the relationship with the customer already. You're uncovering those opportunities. So make sure that you get credit for it.
Definitely. Totally agree. And I think that, yeah, even if you're not directly in charge of it, having that predictability or that funnel view or just understanding where you're going to get the next upsell from or if a renewal is going to come in, all of that forecasted into some way of a customer success opportunity funnel is so, so helpful, not only for customer success leaders that are trying to predict net retention for the year, but also just for a CSM that has skin in the game that also really wants to make sure that they're hitting their revenue targets that they've been outlined in their comp plan. Because as you mentioned, there should be some level of comp given for upsells and renewals and just the revenue side of the business, which leads me to my next question around customer success teams being modeled either as a profit center or a cost center, because I think a lot of companies really debate, should it be a cost center? Should it just be part of cost of goods sold? Or should it be something that you're making money on? Basically, what I'm trying to ask is, should we really be charging for customer success or should it be baked into the cost of goods sold or the cost of your product?
I love the idea of charging for a CSM, but personally, I think it's really hard to do that, especially if you have a technical product and you typically... And I know we could get into the debate of what does customer success mean and how is it defined at all various companies. But typically, a true customer success manager is more business facing. And so if you're supporting a really technical product, there is 100% still value in having a CSM, but I don't know that it's enough value that customers can wrap their mind around to pay for. Maybe if you have like more of the technical account manager side, for sure. Like that can be a direct paid for resource. And I think that's a much easier conversation. But I do think that, you know, you should be able to structure the team as a profit center, even if you're not kind of directly getting paid for as maybe a SKU or a line item. And this is really where it's telling that revenue story, right? And it's understanding, you know, how are we helping drive revenue? And that could be super clear if you're responsible for renewals and upsells or even for reducing churn. It could be a little bit less clear, maybe if you're responsible for onboarding. But if you're responsible for onboarding and you do a great onboarding experience, you get the customer up to speed and using your product and some quick ROI, that's probably going to lead to higher level of retention when the renewal comes around. So I think back to the earlier part of, it's really about storytelling and figuring out how do you tie to revenue. And I think storytelling, another lesson that I've learned is that it doesn't happen one time, right? It's something that you have to consistently beat that drum around and make sure you're sharing that consistent story time over time to your various stakeholders. But it's something that you're thinking about every day or every week, but it's not necessarily how other teams are thinking about you. So making sure that you're continuing to remind people, you know, how you tie into revenue and, you know, the metrics that you're measuring and how that has impacted the company. I think that's also critically important.
Totally agree. And it's so tricky to actually find a way to charge for customer success because a lot of times it's just kind of now expected or part of most people's cost center, if you want to call it. It's a cost of goods sold, much like support is something that you just have to have in a technical or SaaS product. And now it's like CS is just something you have to have. And it gets really tricky to charge for it if you don't have exact metrics that your CSMs are supposed to uphold in the entire customer lifecycle. Like you mentioned, it's maybe easy to prove something in onboarding, but then maybe down the line, how are you continuing to prove value that aren't metric driven? Not saying that it's not possible. You definitely could. And I know a lot of companies that do charge for CS, but I get worried that someone's going to make my churn my CSM if I were to charge for them. They'll be like, oh, we don't need a CSM this year. We've had 2 years of CS and it's enough for us and we're good to go. And then you're kind of left without that revenue stream that is your customer success department. So it's a little bit tricky. And I think everyone has it a little bit different. But I would agree that it is something that should just be baked into your cost of goods. And it's just assumed that, you know, when you have a CSM, you're then kind of taken care of for the longevity of your time as a customer at Fastly or any other business. But speaking of, cost center or profit center, are you guys incentivizing your CSMs to sell more to actually earn a commission? Or what is their variable like? Like, what does a CSM have to do in order to earn their bonuses? Is it just selling more or is there other parts to that?
For us, it's really based on that net revenue retention. So the easiest way I explain it is, you know, you start with your book of business at the beginning of the year and it bills $1 million. And by the end of the year, you want it to bill $1.2 million. And we don't necessarily dictate how to get there. We don't say you have to sell, you know, 100K of this and 200K of this or anything like that. But it's, you know, manage your book of business. So understanding that there will be some renewals that have downsell, understanding that there might be some organic growth, or there might be, you know, a product that you specifically sell. And so it's really on each of the CSMs to put together a strategy plan for their book of business and each individual account and be able to understand, you know, where are those opportunities? What are customers interested in? And kind of what's the timing? How do I impact that? And by doing that, you kind of, I don't know, even out all of those various factors to get towards that goal at the end of the year.
Yeah, totally agree. I think net retention is probably the hottest metric that's tracked right now in customer success. I think most SaaS businesses are looking at the end of the year, at the end of the fiscal year, as long as you come out with more in revenue from your book of business rather than less, everyone is happy days. And I think a lot of CS teams and CS leadership are really, really focused on maximizing profitability rather than just productivity. Like, oh, just do something to do something. It's more do something that leads to some level of revenue or profitability for the business. Do you have any tactical takeaways for our listeners on how to build a CS profit center, or let's say a customer success team that's focused on net retention?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is really going back to this idea of why CS, right? Why was the team formed? What was the gap that you were trying to fill, or, you know, the metric that you were trying to impact? And if you don't know, go ask. Your CEO probably knows, your CFO probably knows. And if you're building it from scratch, make sure that you're aligning on that up front. And that's how you can then start to tell that story of, okay, here are the metrics that we all as a leadership organization feel like are really important, and can start to tie the things that you measure and potentially incentivize on to those metrics and then be able to tell that story internally. So I think one of the biggest gaps that I've seen is not having that internal alignment and being afraid to talk numbers, right? It's like, oh, you know, I don't want to commit to a quota, or I don't want to commit to, you know, some sort of revenue growth. Don't be afraid of numbers. Have a conversation with finance and find something that's reasonable. I think part of the reason that people don't want to talk to finance is it feels like they're going to get this number that came out of thin air that is so unachievable and everything else. But I think if you can break it down and really look at how are these numbers being developed and are they realistic given the coverage and the customers and the opportunity that's still out there, then I think it makes sense. It's one of the interesting conversations we've had internally around kind of transition time, right? Where at first, some of the feedback from sales was, I don't want to transition an account to a CSM until like I've had all the opportunities, right? I've sold everything. That's like, well, okay, we can structure it that way, but then CSMs can't have a revenue goal because if you've sold everything already, what are we going to do, right? Like then there's nothing left to grow. And so I think it's just making sure that there's really alignment on, again, that structure and expectations so that you can tie the metrics and be able to tell that revenue type story.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think knowing your metrics inside and out and also knowing how to achieve that metric makes it much more doable and more and less scary. Because I think a lot of times when people are trying to transition to positive net retention and making sure that we're aiming to come out of the year with more money than more churn, let's say, I think it's just breaking it down, like you said, and having those honest, open conversations, but then looking at, okay, if this is where I'm starting at, then this is actually how much I'm going to have to organically grow, strategically grow, maybe go out and chase and grow. But it makes it more attainable when you break it down into those smaller digestible bits. And for any CS leader that's building a CS team or a profit center that is customer success, really just breaking it down probably makes it the easiest way to see success. But we could probably keep talking about revenue and customer success forever, but I do want to wrap up our conversation with our quick fire section. And I'm going to challenge you to answer these next few questions in like a sentence or less. Are you ready?
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. So the first question I have is, what do you think is next for the customer success industry?
So I think there's a huge focus on CS ops and tech ops or tech touch. I think those are kind of the two hot topics. My opinion is that we need to start talking and really focusing on value. So how are we maximizing all of our interactions with customers?
Interesting. I'd say, yep, that's totally true. I hear it often enough. Everyone's looking for a hot CS operations person or some sort of digital tech-led one-to-many strategy. But you're right, bringing value to our customers, no matter if it's digital, no matter if it's through operations, you still have to bring that value, which is so, so key and so important. So totally agree. It will be interesting to see how we continue to bring value to our customers. Speaking of technology, my next question is, what sort of tool set does your current customer success team use right now?
Primarily Salesforce. We have a CS tool, but I'd say like many, and if people who are listening are currently there, it's okay. We evolve from spreadsheets. So I think that's just how you start.
I love it. No matter how many tools you have in your toolbox, it's always a spreadsheet. Somehow we always seem to go back to the trusty old spreadsheet, yes. Which, speaking of, I have 10 tabs open that are spreadsheets right now. So nothing wrong with a good spreadsheet. My next question is, what sort of compensation should a CSM get? I think you already answered this, but do you think it's just a base salary or a base salary plus commission?
Base plus commission. And I feel like the commission should be focused on metrics that are specific to the CS team and what they're trying to drive.
Definitely. Totally agree. And finally, my last question is, what is your favorite part of customer success or being a CSM?
So I'll say two things. So I'll probably go longer than one sentence. The first is being customer facing and being able to form those long-term relationships and see the companies that you're working with and supporting, you know, the individual people grow, the companies grow. I think that that's really exciting. And then the second piece, I'll kind of end how I started, is just this community of sharing. I think the customer success community is amazingly supportive, and being able to be a part of it and, you know, share what I know and get knowledge from others has been a really cool experience.
Yeah, I love it. I love that all the empathy of all the customer success people out there results in such a sharing community. So totally agree. Thank you so much, Emily, for your time and sharing all your wisdom. If anyone has any other questions, where is it that we can find you?
Yeah, I'm probably most active on LinkedIn, Emily Garza. And I've also recently launched Value CS with Emily. That's a website, as well as I post some infographics on LinkedIn as well of just some of the learnings that I've had.
Amazing. I'll make sure to link all of that down in the show notes. But thank you again for your time. Really appreciated this conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Customer Success Channel podcast today. We hope you learned something new to take back to your team and your company. If you found value in our podcast, please make sure to give us a positive review and make sure you subscribe to our channel as we release new podcasts every month. Also, if you have any topics that you would like me to discuss in the future, or you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please feel free to reach out. All my contact details are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time for more on customer success.